This is Laura Hamburg with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Fry Vineyards put Mendocino County on the map as America's first organic and biodynamic winery. That wouldn't have happened if Paul Fry and his wife Marguerite, known as Biba, hadn't landed jobs at the Talmadge State Hospital in 1959. Both doctors, they had been hired to do early research on mental health issues and psychedelics, LSD and psilocybin. Paul and Biba had 12 children, tow-headed kids who all learned about grit and hard work and lived in a big, rambling, converted barn in Redwood Valley in the 1970s, one they shared with visiting intellectuals and a menagerie of animals, including once a pet deer that lived in the house. Jonathan Fry was the eldest of those 12 kids, and he would later meet his wife, Katrina, at a Covelo gardening project run by an eccentric Englishman named Alan Chadwick. Chadwick is credited with teaching gardening to a veritable who's who of farming, food, and wine luminaries. Recently, Jonathan Fry, general manager of Fry Vineyards, stopped by the Magruder Ranch in Potter Valley to talk with me about his parents' journey back and forth across Route 66 in the 50s. Back then, Jonathan's folks had worked as young clinic doctors in the Southwest with the Navajo and Hopi peoples. With young John in tow, the couple crisscrossed the country searching for land and their next public hospital job. This is Laura Hamburg, and I'm here at the Magruder Ranch, July 18th, 2019, with A Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Will you tell us your name?
My name is John Fry, J-O-N, short for Jonathan, like a lot of them are.
And Jonathan, where and when were you born?
I was born on May 15th, 1953 in Indianapolis, Indiana. I lived there about 2 weeks.
What happened? Why 2 weeks?
Oh, my parents were there. They were finishing up school, and they had traveled out west quite a bit. They had come through the North Coast in the late 40s and early 50s, and also spent quite a bit of time in the Southwest near the Four Corners area. And then later they were going to Long Beach, California to do the end of their medical education, like a residency, I'm pretty sure, or something like that. And so they were on their way to Long Beach after wrapping things up at their school. But just immediately prior, they had been in the Tuba City area in Arizona, and then briefly went to Indianapolis, where I was born, and then later headed out west again.
So where did you spend your sort of formative years, say 0 to 10?
0 to 10. My parents did hop around a little bit. They were in Long Beach. I believe then they went to the Southwest again, to Fort Defiance, also in Arizona, Shiprock, New Mexico, and they worked for the Public Health Service. My father was working off time. He didn't go to World War II because he was in college. Anyway, then he, I think, served in the Public Health Service. So they hopped around a little bit. Then they went briefly to New Hampshire and then back out west again and moved to Mendocino County in 1959, finally.
What was your mom studying?
She was also studying pediatrics, I believe.
Can you just tell the story a little bit about how your mom and dad met before Jonathan Fry came to the world?
Oh, I see. Let's see what I know about that. My mother was born in Minnesota. She was from a Lutheran family. Her father was a Lutheran minister. My dad's father also was, and he was raised in Brooklyn, and my mother later moved to Brooklyn. So they were tied in with the Lutheran church, and they believe they probably met in Brooklyn, then later did more traveling. So they met when they were probably in their early to mid-20s, I would guess, but I'm not totally sure.
And during that time, your mother, Biba Fry,
correct.
During that era, getting an education, and was that considered an independent thing to do in the Lutheran cultural?
Certainly to be a doctor was, I think she was only one of two female people in her class. And I believe she went to the medical school at Indiana.
Tell us what your mom's specialty during her formative early years and your dad's in terms of the medical field.
In the medical field, yeah. I think they were just both general, GPs, and my mom did have a specialty in children, I'm almost sure. And then later when they worked in the Southwest, and they ran a public health clinic, and they worked with the Navajos and the Hopis there. So they were exposed to a lot of that culture, and then they really made up their mind to go back to the land, so to speak. And my parents, my father especially, really wanted to get the hell out of New York City, and couldn't really stand the city. He felt much more comfortable out in the country. So they kind of took off on a mission to move somewhere out to the country. They didn't have any really clear-cut goals. They talked about moving up to Alaska even, and doing that kind of thing. Of course, they were both city kids pretty much. Although my mom had spent quite a bit of time in her youth working on a farm of a woman who was a friend of the family, and she had a pretty small-scale dairy farm in upstate New York. So that was a very formative thing for her, because she really did everything from churning the butter to growing the vegetables. They didn't have any power, and this was prior to the modern model of, dairy farming. And there was a lot of small-scale dairy farmers did go out of business starting in the 1930s because they couldn't afford stainless steel and such. And so anyway, my mom did have a pretty good country background. My father, in their church, a small church in Brooklyn, they had a country place where they would do summer camps and such. And this was in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. So he always really looked forward to the 6 or 8 weeks they would spend there every summer out in nature. So both my parents, even though they were raised in the city, really wanted to get back to nature in a certain way.
So let's go back to sort of going different places, bouncing around a lot, road trips and living different places. Yeah. And you're 0 to 10.
Route 66, back and forth several times.
And then where did you land while you're still young?
Well, I was still young. We landed here in Talmadge first. We lived over in Talmadge for a couple of years, starting in 1959 through 61. And during this time, they were trying to find a piece of property to buy. They didn't have hardly any money. And they had gotten jobs working for the old state hospital here. And so they finally found this place in Tomkai Road in Redwood Valley, which was 95 acres. And it had some previous hay farming on it. It was pretty run down. It had an old beat-up barn on it. It cost $24,500, which they couldn't afford. So they took out a note on it, which they ultimately paid back in about 10 years. And that was starting in 1961. And so when they started working at the state hospital here, it was a state-run institution. Neither of my parents ever had a private practice as such, and they always worked for the state while they were here. And they had first gotten into it. They were going to study the early research into psychedelics, mostly, which started at Mendocino State Hospital in 1959. And that's what drew my parents out here, especially my father. He wanted to understand more about this due to his experience in the Southwest with the Hopis and so on, with their ceremonies they would have. So that kind of piqued his interest in these things and mental health. And so he came out to join a group that was starting to do LSD research at that time. And so they got their LSD from the Sandoz company, which was in Switzerland. It's a well-known, very large pharmaceutical company, where the guy Albert Hofmann, who first synthesized the compound, worked at that time. I think he synthesized it from the ergot fungus. Lots of people have heard about this. So they started studying that, and they had a whole crew of doctors and then graduate students who worked there and did various types of tests on it, I guess, or trials to see if it was something that could be used for treating various types of mental health issues. And then that went on for several years. So there was a whole jolly crew of people, I guess, who were studying these things at that time. And then it sort of, they passed laws against it. My father didn't like that. He came at it, he was very old school, straight type of intellectual, let's say. And so he didn't approve. Finally, the whole scene kind of blew sky high when all the doctors and everything were doing the stuff that was supposed to go to the trial subjects. And they were all walking around hiring a kite, maybe at certain times. That might be a bit of an exaggeration, because they did bring a lot of scholarly rigor to their studies as well. and there was various things published. But they had people from out of town also, other colleges and stuff who were out here working with them. I have a book here that I'm going to give you, which is a very good book from an archive point of view, which talks about that time in the county here during the 1960s with that crew of people who were out there at the state hospital.
What do you remember your father telling you, like any specific stories about, well, for example, where did they get the test subjects, the folks that were participating?
I think they were just the clients, as they called them, who were people at the hospital. And of course here, this wasn't a hospital for the criminally insane. And so it was, you know, later when the state hospital system was shut down at the end of the 60s, this was one of them that went, but they still kept a couple open, I think Napa and a couple others. This was part of the old school mental health care system, which used to exist in the state of California. There was I think around that time, towards the end of the 60s, with Nixon and Henry J. Kaiser, and they fought back the single-payer concept, although Medicare still made it for those over 65. As I understand it, right about the time they were going for a single-payer system for children, that was going to be called kiddie care. That was finally fought back by the industry with the insurance industry. So now we have our healthcare system such as it is that we know today. And so at that time, they did shut the hospital. I believe Reagan was governor at that time. So then my parents lost their jobs there.
Were they using mescaline, LSD?
As I understand, I don't really know all that much about it either, but maybe this book I have from a guy named Ralph Metzner, who passed away recently, and he wrote a book which talks about that time somewhat. Yeah, they were using various psychoactive substances. I believe it was psilocybin. I don't know about mescaline. Many of these were used by, you know, ethnic groups throughout history and so on. You know, LSD, of course, was a newer thing, and there was research happening at all in lots of different ways. You know, we've heard about how the CIA and such would. So this was part of stuff that was happening at that time. At a certain time, a lot of this stuff, was banned. My father's view was, well, these hippies kind of made it hit the gutter when it was worthy of further study. So he didn't really like that. Like I said, he was a pretty old school, straight jacket kind of guy. Anyway, that did shut down those, you know, research programs.
Did your mom and dad come out here to take the job at the state hospital? They were like recruited?
No, I think they applied for the job. They were living back east for a short period there after they had left the Southwest and that stint in California. And so then they heard about this research, opportunity. And so they did apply for the job at the Mendocino State Hospital. And that was in 1959. So then we drove across country, yeah.
Your father's work in psychedelics and mental health, was that what he was applying for the job to do, that specific role?
As far as I know, yes. And that's why they came out here. And I suppose also it was a, you know, job opportunity. He really liked it out here in the West, you know, with all the big trees, and be as far away as possible from, New York City. So anyway.
I'm curious if you remember him ever telling you about the benefits of using any of these medicines. I'm going to use the word medicine instead of drugs.
Yeah.
A little bit about his philosophical beliefs or what he gleaned and learned as a researcher.
I think he was in the camp where you had to have a certain level of, experience, or I guess you could call it maturity. You had to have enough ballast, and he felt that people shouldn't take these types of things until they were in their 40s, let's say. He hated the idea of young people dropping acid, willy-nilly, and blowing their minds and stuff. As I said, he would be the groundsman, they would call it. This is the person in an old-school Freudian way where you sit by the couch and the person is, tripping on these substances, and they'll sit there with a notepad and take notes and ask the people questions and to try to guide them, you know, through their kind of experience. And then also trying to glean just what was causing that experience and what these different types of mythical, you know, images and so on, what they would mean, you know, stuff like that. So it was sort of a philosophical exercise also, as well as a study, maybe along the lines of Huxley, Aldous Huxley, was involved in that kind of thing, and various other people. Metzner, of course, who I mentioned earlier, who just passed away recently. And then later they founded such groups as the Institute of Noetic Sciences and so on and so forth. And of course, as you know, nowadays there's a bit of a resurgence in research on those things. So it kind of went underground for 40, 50 years or so. My father, like I said, he was sort of the scholarly, studious type and didn't understand why people would go off the deep end on it, although many of his colleagues and graduate students would take these things from time to time, from what I heard. And finally, the whole thing was shut down, I think, before 1965, you know, due to the legal pressure and the whole counterculture and all that stuff swirling around. So, but as far as it being good for people, as I said, he seemed to have a lot of respect for it in a certain way. And especially with the ethnic, you know, the other cultures that would use it and what kind of settings they would use it in.
That's fascinating. Was your mom doing this research as well?
Yeah, she was kind of involved. She also worked there at the state hospital. She would do a lot of case write-ups, you know, and various people, you know, coming into the hospital. As I mentioned, they called them clients. So when I was a kid, I would go to River Union School here. And we would walk to school about 2.5 miles, and then we'd ride our little bikes around the campus there, and we'd get to know some of the characters there who were very, colorful, you could say. So we did have some experience, and later we moved out to, Redwood Valley and didn't stay there much.
How long did your parents work at the hospital?
They worked until it closed, and which was, I believe, 1969 or 70, probably. That would be my guess, when they shut the whole thing down. So my dad lost his job. That was very hard on him and on the family. And so then my mother went to work for the Sonoma State Hospital, which was for challenged people, I guess you'd call it, mentally retarded and such. And so she had a pretty good shift there. She'd work 48 hours every week, day and night. This was like a Saturday-Sunday thing, and then therefore she would get a week's worth of pay. So that kind of kept the family going during the 70s, but things were pretty well falling apart with the family at that time as far as money, so everybody was really broke out there at the ranch. My dad took his pension from the state hospital and cashed it out to finish paying for the property, so at least there wouldn't be any debt on the property. And at that time, I graduated from high school from Ukiah High in 1971, so I kind of got the heck out of Dodge. A lot of kids at that time didn't want to hang out around Ukiah, and so I moved out, and I was gone for most of the 70s, but I would come back from time to time, certainly.
How would you describe yourself as a young person in 1971? Were you a hippie? I mean, how would you characterize yourself?
Not exactly a hippie, no. I enjoyed studying. And then I got a thing, although I was working my senior year of high school. I worked for the drugstore here in town and would drive the, you know, packages around to the various people. And I always had to work because we didn't have any, money at that time. I also got jobs working in carpentry and such here around town. Later, I worked at the roofing company in Ukiah for about a year. Then I worked at the wood treatment plant south of Ukiah. It was called Coast Wood, and they would treat the wood with the real nasty CCA compound, the copper chromium arsenate. And I worked night shift there for about a year. So I was just doing anything. And I did do something when I was in high school. I applied for a summer session at the UC Santa Cruz. And this was a special program they had at that time for high school juniors where you could experience what going to college was actually like. And since I barely graduated from high school due to having to work, I was able to go to that summer session, which later helped me to get accepted at college there. At that time, college was almost free. It was $129 a quarter, and I was able to scrape together that money. I also worked at the pear sheds every season for quite a while, and that was owned by the Thomas family. And so I was able to have enough money to pay for myself going to college, but I was only able to finish two years there due to lack of funds. But I did finish two full years. While I was there, I studied linguistics and astrophysics was the two things And that's what I wanted to do. I really wanted to be an astronomer when I was in high school for whatever far out reasons. And so, because I was, curious about that. And so that's what I studied at UC Santa Cruz. And it was a very, influential college professor I had, Sandra Faber. And so she had a big, influence on me. And at that time, they were getting the first CCD, imaging methods that are now used in all cameras and such. So that was also quite exciting. And they were starting to have new understanding of the, evolution of stars and solar system formation. So it was a pretty exciting time to be there at UCSC. And UCSC was affiliated with the Lick Observatory. So we'd make frequent trips up there to the Lick just outside of San Jose, which was quite cool. But as far as making a living at being an astronomer, it would be quite tough. You'd have to go to graduate school. It would take a lot of money to get you through it. I didn't want to take out student loans because I was afraid of being in debt, even though back then the cost of going to college was really quite a bit less than it is now, and quite a bit of it was free because it was funded by the state then. And of course, it's a problem nowadays with the problems with educational debt, as you know. So, but I did end up going there for, 2 years. It was there that I ran into the people at the so-called Garden Project, which was run by an eccentric Englishman, Alan Chadwick, who was a Shakespearean actor and quite a character. He really put a lot of effort into putting together a course of study to teach just about every aspect of growing any kind of food you could ever think of, everything from composting to plant breeding to seed saving and so on and so forth. And so he put together a Garden Project, it was called, on the UCSC campus, even though he wasn't fully, accredited as a teacher there. And so I would hang out there since I was so broke. I was camping out in the woods to save money on rent, and you'd get free food there sometimes. So I would, hang out and check out the scene. And then, even though I was never a formal member of it then, there was a very good article in Life magazine, I think in very late 60s or 70s, talking about the natural food movement, which featured the Alan Chadwick project at that time. And then later, he got in a tiff with the school administrators for various reasons. He wanted to build a big eco-village there, and they didn't like that for all kinds of reasons. And so then he left there. He went off and started a couple other garden projects at other places, finally wound up, of all places, up here in Covelo. So that kind of blew my mind. Here it was pretty much in my backyard. So I went up there in 74, and I knew some of the kids that were up there working at that time. He originally had a garden right next to town, then it flooded in 1974, I believe. So then they moved it to about a 9-acre project to the northwest of town.
I'm going to just stop you there.
Sure.
I'm Covelo.
Yeah.
Can you kind of paint a picture of what it was like working on that project and being around those young people and being around Alec Chadwick in Covelo? And maybe tell us like a moment that stands out for you when it was really working.
Yeah, I could try how the garden project was working up in Covelo. I went there, of course, because I was broke and figured if I was going to have a cashless kind of existence, I might as well learn how to grow food and all that stuff. And so it was incredibly valuable from that point of view, knowing that you always had kind of a safety net under you as far as the economics went. I think that's how it used to be in the old days, too. Like during the Great Depression, quite a few people would often have a cow or something back on some farm they could go to if the cash was gone. And so it kind of gave you that sense, knowing that you always could grow what you needed if you had that knowledge. And so I went there for that purpose. I went up in 1976. I was with my brother. We had gotten a hold of an old boat, and so we were trying to fish for salmon off the coast at Noyo. And that was the first year of the droughts of 76 and 77. So for whatever reasons, the fish weren't running all that well. And so then on the last day we were there, we were just about out of money. I figured I'd go up to Round Valley and see what was happening with the people that I knew up there with Chadwick's Garden Project. So this was in its heyday. There was probably about 80 people involved, so it was a pretty big. It was the largest of his various projects that he had pulled together. So he would have been in his late 60s at that time. He was born in 1909, and like I said, for the last decade or more of his life, he put a ton of effort into putting together this course on, and kept on making it better and better. It was very rigidly structured. There would be lectures on Monday or Tuesday, formal lectures from him, and you better not be late kind of a thing. And then there'd be practical demonstrations of what the subject was for that week. And of course, there was work. You had to sign up for 6 days a week, sun up to sundown, for a year's course of study. But it was all free, which was a pretty incredible deal. And so I signed up for a year, and that's where I met my wife, Katrina. She had also signed up there. She had a green thumb. She came from a family. Her grandfather was a nurseryman back in Vermont for a flower nursery. So he would sell various kinds of perennial plants, and that's what he, you know, specialized in there. And so she had always had an interest in that, and she was kind of stuck in a dead-end job working for the welfare office in Contra Costa County, and she really thought she wanted to learn more about that so she could possibly take over her grandfather's nursery, was her thinking at that time. So anyway, we met up there in 1976, and we were both part of that class. There was upperclassmen, and we were the lower-class people. It was run like an old English military style, if you will, where Chadwick was the big boss, and then under him there was levels of management, and they would have weekly management meetings. Finally, I did become the poultry manager. There was a little animal thing happening as well. There was a high turnover rate. He was also a very volatile character, and like I said, kind of eccentric, and many people found it hard to work around him sometimes. At the same time, he could be incredibly charming. And he was very well spoken, you know, certainly due to his acting experience. On Fridays, there was the arts, you know, so you'd have what was called mime and deportment, which was mime. So you'd do these exercises that are learned during acting class, which I didn't really take that much part in. Then there was a recitation, mostly of Shakespeare sonnets and such. Then there was music, and he would teach opera singing. So I was lucky enough to be the piano accompanist, which was pretty harrowing because he had kind of a loose timing and you had to be right on when you'd hit your chord for him. And then there'd be these other poor students who'd be having to sing, you know, with him. And anyway, so those were kind of, entertaining at the very least. But the general vibe of the place, you had to be, you know, it was quite a bit of work. There was always something to do, a lot of physical labor. And a lot of pretty healthy young folks who were doing that. And a lot of free food, of course. We didn't sell hardly any of the food. There was mass quantities, which were composted regularly. Like I was getting about 120 eggs a day from the chicken flock that I was running. And practically all of it would be composted. But we still ate extremely well working there. There was the very small Round Valley Co-op at that time. That was started by some, back to the landers in the early 70s. So we sold a very little bit of stuff there, but we were called the Mad Dogs and Englishmen. We were the Mad Dogs, and he was the Englishman. And and as I said, there'd be a new class coming in. They had a publication. They would try to do fundraising. There was a publication called the Dirt Man Journal. But yeah, overall, it was very educational and worthwhile thing to do. And just recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, one of his former students took it upon himself to contact as many people as possible, several hundred people who had been, associated with these various garden projects, a guy named Craig Siska. And so at the winery, we helped by paying for putting together a website. It just went live about a year ago. It's chadwickarchive.org. And there was a lot more stuff out there than we thought. Chadwick was very anti-guru. He did not see himself as a guru of any sort, and he hated being taped or videoed. So it was, you were kind of lucky to get him to pose for anything or to hold forth on various subjects. But he was a very good lecturer, very far out in some ways, but very practical in other ways. He became friends with Reagan when they were going to flood Round Valley. Ronald Reagan made several visits to the valley, and it was uncertain what was going to happen, whether it was going to get flooded or not. I'm not sure if you ever heard about those stories. That was the book, The River Stops Here. I can't remember the name of the guy that wrote it. He was an Englishman who lived up in Round Valley at that time. So Chadwick and Reagan, both of them being actors and both of them loving to shoot the breeze all day, they got along famously. And Chadwick had a lot of respect for ministers, as he called them, like, government officials in a very old school kind of way. And so he was kind of a complicated character. and could often be very tough to deal with. I personally never had a problem with him. He would play tricks on you all the time, like he would ask questions on a certain subject, you know, or a certain flower or plant and what its origin was. And then maybe a week or two later, he'd start talking about the same thing. And if you were able to pick up where he left off, he'd be thrilled. If you didn't, he would stomp off in a huff, you know, or start cussing or something like that. And his basic thing was origin. Where do all the wild things come from? Origin versus culture. So origin is the wild, you know, ecosystem, which people, of course, came out of. But people brought culture to it. Of course, that begs the question, why did the ecosystem create humans to start with, let's say? So you'd have talks about that kind of thing. But then people bringing culture. Culture, if you took a French poodle and put it out in the woods, it wouldn't last 24 hours because it's been bred and cultured, you know, for humans' purposes. And so you would pick every plant. Every week there'd be a different plant, typically, which would be the subject. Where did that plant's lifeline cross that of the humans? And why did humans alter it? You know, so you take the brassica family, which let's say is, you know, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, mustard, all those things. They all came from the wild mustard. And people are able to breed back to the wild mustard. However, the cultured plants have been bred by people for their own uses. And so then you'd look at that. What was the origin of these plants? When did they first encounter people and vice versa? And then get into, you know, breeding and such. So it was quite informative as far as going back to the origins of the, you know, ecosystem and the kind of breeding and effort that it took over many thousands of years, people working with the other members of the, you know, ecosystem, if you will. And so that was good because it gave a very good in-depth kind of appreciation of the, you know, ecosystem and people's role in it, if you will, if they have a role, so to speak.
Let's put this in context of Mendocino County, your work with Chadwick and yeah. Katrina. Who are some of the people that benefited from that work, that got that training, that ended up making a difference or practicing their craft in Mendocino County?
Mendocino County? Well, that would be various gardeners who are members of the, you know, Chadwick College of Horticultural Knowledge. So, see, some come to mind. We actually just had a reunion last fall with a lot of the Chadwick folks. We had about 50 or 60 people show up, including Richard Wilson, who is the patron of the project up in Covelo. He is a landowner up there. He was also the head of the CDF, the California Department of Forestry. So he was there. He's in his 80s now. And so we did, with the help of Craig Siska and others, we put out the word. We're talking about having a reunion every few years now with these folks. In Mendocino County, I can think of Chris and Steffi Tebbutt over in Anderson Valley. They were Chadwick graduates, if you will. Well, there's Fred Marshall in Willits. Who else comes to mind? Oh, there's the Stephen and Gloria Decatur up at the Live Power Farm up in Covelo. They do a so-called CSA. Who else would there be? I would have to think a little bit longer. But yeah, there's a, you know, definitely a few folks. Many of the people who worked with Chadwick, it definitely had a, you know, influence on them. Most of them would say, I think a certain fraction did end up getting into, you know, agriculture of various types.
Tell us how it influenced you specifically.
Well, yeah, like I mentioned earlier, it gave me a sense that I could always get by even if there wasn't any money. You know, assuming, of course, that you had a plot of land and water. So then you get into a whole can of worms there as to who owns the land and where the water comes from and paying taxes on it and having cash crops and stuff. But if you do have that, of course you can grow things. You don't actually need land. You can grow them in pots or something, I would suppose. But yeah, I think just that sense of having a deeper understanding of where food comes from and people's, you know, interactions with the rest of the ecosystem and how everything did come out of the wild origin, you know, really gives depth. You know, if you see a vineyard or an orchard or something, you know what's happening with it and how it got there. And then later being involved in, you know, agriculture with the farmer's market after we left the garden project, and then later with the, you know, vineyard work, you get a sense of how that all works. And you get into such things as, you know, finance, banking, the whole modern, you know, agricultural system, and the